This is the latest in a series of documentaries from the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. In this very special episode of the programme, we're once again gathering Nobel perspectives from some of those brilliant laureates in economic sciences with whom UBS works to shine a light on the complexities and challenges of a fast-changing world. Today we're asking, can people be nudged into better behaviour? We'll hear from two extraordinary laureates, Daniel Kahneman and Richard Thaler, each of whom can leverage a wealth of experience, expertise and intellectual rigour to drive the discourse on behavioural economics. Now, unlike classical economic theory, behavioural economics studies the decisions of individuals not based on the assumption of rationality, but on the basis of cultural and social factors, as well as psychological insights. Daniel Kahneman was awarded the Nobel Prize in 2002 because he was among the first to integrate psychological research on decision-making into economic science. Kahneman, author of the 2011 bestseller Thinking Fast and Slow, remembers when behavioural economics started in its modern form.
It began in a bar. Amos Tversky and I and Eric Warner, we met in a bar, and Eric Warner told us that he wanted to bring psychology and economics together. And I remember I gave him two comments. The first one was that there was no way he could spend a lot of money on that project honestly. And the second piece of advice was that he should look for economists who were interested in psychology and he should support them. And that's what he did. Eric Warner became the president of the Russell Sage Foundation. And the first grant they gave was to Dick Thaler to spend a year with me. In some ways, that was the beginning of behavioral economics.
Despite some skepticism from traditional economics, a success story began. Kahneman says it was not so much down to him and his colleague and partner in crime, Amos Tversky, although they were certainly involved. There were other people, equally important, quite likely without even realizing the importance of their actions. Kahneman, again.
We get, I think, more credit than we deserve. There is somebody else who deserves credit for behavioral economics, although I'm sure he doesn't mention it as one of his major achievements. That's Joe Stiglitz. Joe Stiglitz was the editor of the Journal of Economic Perspectives. And Joe Stiglitz invited Dick Thaler to write a regular column in that journal. And Dick Thaler chose the word anomalies, that is, challenges to the theory. It was always funny, it was always easy to read, and it was in some way devastating to some piece of theory. That had an enormous impact on the acceptance of behavioural economics.
So what of Richard Thaler, the 2017 laureate, a voice from whom we've heard on this programme discussing his focus on decision-making and his wider work in behavioural economics? He's circumspect about the role he played, despite his innovations in this space and Kahneman's belief.
I always say that I don't think I changed anybody's mind. People don't change their minds about anything. So I took the strategy of corrupting the youth and trying to get young economists excited and interested. I'm sure lots of graduate students and new assistant professors were reading these and saying, oh, that's cool. Maybe I should work on that.
The term behavioral economics, as it is now understood, it's primarily because of nudges. You're trying to make it easier for people to decide what they would decide if they were thinking broadly. That is really the key.
Richard Thaler has a good example to share when it comes to the overall principle of nudging. It's the cafeteria at the university where he teaches, the Chicago Booth School of Business.
If we went downstairs to our cafeteria, there are several stations that you can get food, and you have to walk around the salad bar to get to the burgers and fries. This is an example of how something that seemingly isn't very important may influence what people eat, nudge people to eat something healthy. If you discover that that cinnamon roll you were about to buy has 1,000 calories, you might say, oh, well, maybe that banana looks good.
Within and without the profession, people were arguing that everyone should be able to act as a free agent and should be left to make his or her own decisions. Thaler explains, however, that this is no contradiction to the concept of nudging.
There has to be a menu. There has to be a design of that cafeteria. Why not make it a good one? People say we're bossing people around, which we're not. There's always opt-out in the policies we design. The analogy we like is to GPS. I have the world's worst sense of direction. So wandering around in a strange city, I'm doomed. Now, think about GPS. The user chooses the destination, and the map helps you get there and allows you to take a detour. If you're driving and you see a nice view, pull over. The GPS never yells at you, right? It's not a backseat driver. So imagine that we can have GPS for life that just made getting where you want to go easier without ever commanding that you must do something. That would be great.
Richard Thaler. The first so-called nudge unit was founded by former Prime Minister David Cameron here in the UK in 2010. Hundreds of others followed around the world. Today it's difficult for Thaler to keep track of all the studies that are being conducted, but he remembers one in particular that shows the impact nudging can have on people's health.
I'll tell you one study I saw recently that I liked quite a lot. There's an opioid crisis in the United States. People get addicted to pain-killing drugs. There have been many deaths. There are lots of things one can do. One simple change is to take one of our usual tricks, change the default. Suppose you had some surgery and you'd get a prescription for these painkillers. Just changing the default size of the first prescription can help. Maybe just give them 10. And say they can call and renew if they're having a lot of pain. A recent study did something clever, which is anytime a patient died of a drug overdose, they sent a note to the doctor who had originally prescribed the pain medicine. And what they found is those doctors started reducing their use of these drugs. So this is giving feedback. The nudge is feedback.
Thaler explains that there are many everyday health examples that also use modern technology to nudge people into better behavior. Take, for instance, the smartwatch.
It will keep track of how many steps you've taken. If at the end of the day it looks like you've barely gotten out of your chair, then the watch will say, time to stand up. It's just the beginning. It can measure your heartbeat and do a primitive EKG. If we try to imagine what this technology will be 10 years from now, even 5 years from now, likely for many people there will be a chip somewhere inside their body that's communicating with the watch or whatever. The technology already exists to monitor blood sugar for people with diabetes and to administer the blood sugar. So that's going beyond nudging, right? That's just taking over. But in many cases, that's just what we want. Just like self-driving cars, if we can have self-driving medications, the easiest way that we could save money on healthcare would be if we could get people to just take their medicines. Until the time that we administer that drug automatically, your watch could remind you that, hey, you forgot to take your heart meds this morning.
The notion of modern economics helping to combat climate change has become ever more important, especially after last year's Nobel Prize was awarded to William Nordhaus for his work on integrating climate change into economic analysis. Thaler shares the view expressed by many of his fellow economists.
There's no one silver bullet. The closest thing we have comes from completely traditional economics. Most places tax alcohol and cigarettes. We should be taxing carbon. Carbon taxes are a good idea because there are lots of things that we need money for. In our country, we have bridges that are ready to fall into rivers. If we raised gasoline taxes and used that to build better roads and bridges, that would be good. The same is true for congestion taxes. And New York seems now ready to do this. London has been doing it for quite a while. Singapore was the pioneer, and there essentially is no traffic in Singapore. So that's step one. Let's raise the price of using the thing that's causing harm. But there's technology and behavioral enhancements that can work well around the edges.
Thaler uses an example that almost anyone could probably relate to, especially on a hot summer day, thermostats.
Modern thermostats know when you're there and when you're not, and they reduce utilization. You could imagine a thermostat that on a hot day, when you turn the thermostat down a degree or two, it says, this is going to cost you $10. You know, it's up to you. Go for it. These are all little things, but the only way we're going to deal with climate change is get the price right and then a lot of little things.
Thaler uses the endowment effect, which he's described in his work, to further illustrate how to lead people into greener behavior.
The endowment effect refers to the fact that once we have something, we're reluctant to give it up. With the use of proper framing, we could remind people how glorious our planet is and they'd like to keep it. Look, advertising works. And so the same strategies that firms use to get you to buy their products could be employed to nudge people to keep the planet going a little bit longer. Images of icebergs the size of small countries falling off the Antarctica and Arctic may help.
Daniel Kahneman picks up on this point.
The assumption of rationality means that you should not intervene in people's lives and in people's decisions. But it's more complicated than that. The whole point of nudges is that people do decide for themselves. You always have choice architecture. There's no way that you can allow people to choose without structuring their choice. People are not opposed to the idea of others helping them structure their choices in their own interest.
And that's Daniel Kahneman concluding another special Nobel Perspectives edition of the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. To read more from and about the laureates and to discover how Nobel Perspectives shape the UBS worldview, head to ubs.com/Nobel. Keep an eye and an ear on this programme in the months ahead as we enjoy more access to the brilliant insights of the Nobel laureates. We've more specials and documentaries in store. But if that's too long to wait, dip into a mix of videos and articles at the UBS Nobel Hub. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Are you interested in learning more about female leaders in economics? UBS, in partnership with independent non-profit network, the Centre for Economic Policy Research, brings you Women in Economics, an expansion of the bank's ongoing Nobel Perspectives programme. We'll be featuring Women in Economics on future editions of this show, but you can find out more right now. Head to ubs.com/WIE.